Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon. Wherever you tuned in from, thank you very much for tuning in to Eagle FM, and you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. This time of the day, as usual, Monday to Friday, your drive time show with your favorite duo here on your number one talk radio station, keeping you company with one topic, exciting topic. That's the part I almost left out. One exciting topic after another, and it's just the 2nd of September. So we're just, September is just getting started. So if you are, if you are anything like me and you're looking in your bank account and you already wish it was, 2 days to the following month and not just 2 days into the beginning of this month, then yeah, don't worry. You're not alone. I imagine there are a lot of us in that boat, but still we're going to have, we're going to keep bringing you one exciting topic, especially coming out of the National Council, National Assembly Standing Committees. And how we here, at least here on Home Run, how we like these reports. And today we have one coming up that is going to dominate, that will be our main source of reference for this afternoon show. So fasten your seatbelt. So, and just you don't have to do the talking. Even if you do that, we're not going to hear you. But we're just glad you can hear us. And if you can't, just keep changing. We have multiple platforms that will enable you to reach us. You can use the website, and if it's not working, there's the app. And if it's not working, just try the app. Talk about multiple ways of solving one problem. So there are more ways than one that you can tune into Eagle FM. Now that we have that out of the way, and we know that a lot of the veteran guys, you already have, you already know your way through all our platforms, basically. So on today's Home Run, we are going to talk about something, well, basically local, and it's flood related, and how the National Council Standing Committee that embarked on a fact-finding endeavor. Right. So they who went on a fact-finding mission, that's the language they use, guys. I didn't come up with this word. So, and this was in the Zambezi region in particular, to look at different places, especially different villages that were impacted, and what central government was able to do in response in our disaster risk management response mechanism, and how some of the problems that were faced by the people or the victims of the flood were addressed by central government, especially the primary player in that department would be your Office of the Prime Minister. And when the National Council Standing Committee now in this, in their fact-finding mission, when they engaged with some of the residents who were affected, what was their response? As all these reports goes, they basically explain the story of their trip, and then provide a conclusion of everything that they observed at the end of at the end of these reports is always conclusion and recommendation. And these recommendations, as you have heard me probably sing it for like 1,000 times by now, they are allowed to, they can, the Parliamentary Standing Committee is just doing this, is just giving this recommendation to, especially in this report, you have the Minister of Urban and Rural Development, as expected. They are just mentioning all of the recommendations, the Minister of Health and Minister of Education, and we are talking about MESAC, not the higher education. And some, you have a lot of, you have a lot of ways to respond to some of these things. And if for those of you that were listening yesterday, you heard me go on a tangent about how about we just come up with a permanent solution instead of being reactive. Albeit yesterday we were talking about the unpredictable weather patterns that is coming from a lot of meteorological organizations, including one of my favorite, that is NOAA. Not the guy that survived the flood. This is different NOAA. It's an organization, not an individual. So, as in yesterday, that wasn't yesterday. That was the day before yesterday. And ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Mr. Lynx.
Are you back in your chair?
I know, right?
you've just been, what do they call that? You've been deprived.
Yeah.
It's not been anchor chair poverty, it's been anchor chair deprivation.
Hey, you know, well, when it comes to this chair, you are my flood. I keep relocating.
No, Helmut, no.
I keep relocating because of you.
No, oh no. You're making it sound like those pickup lines that the guys used to use for the girls, you know. When I was born, I was, the reason I was screaming was because I was searching for you.
Seriously? That works?
Well, it's these African memes, you know, they're doing their best. So, yeah.
No, come on, seriously. Okay, let's be honest here. You cried because, well, the doctor gave you that, that wonderful schmuck because it's required for you to, yeah, that's how they know that, oh, well, he's healthy or she's healthy.
Yeah. No, people have got funny African memes there for pickup lines there on Pinterest. And I was laughing like the whole time, like in last week or whole day, basically. Because it takes you, you click on one, and then it takes you down a rabbit hole and you're just these weird African memes. But yeah. African news aside.
No, look, I have found myself doom scrolling like 1,000 times because of those things. You just open one and then you make one giant mistake of liking or sharing it. Big mistake.
Yeah.
The algorithm is like, more, please.
Okay, let's show Dwight some more of these weird memes that look like they come from somewhere in between Zambia and I have a sneaky suspicion a lot of them might be Zambian or Ugandan.
Yeah, it's mostly, most of them are most likely going to be West African. But there's one Kenyan, there's one, East African guy. I think he's Kenyan. Yeah, now his whole content creation is based around, proposals that he submits to either to private, but mostly to the, to different companies.
Mm.
Yeah, and then they keep rejecting him. But the thing is how he portrays, the proposals.
Mm.
There's one where he went to, where he went to a health facility to be given, a tender to supply condoms.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, his proposal was rejected. Turns out that the problem was the name of his, the name of his company. Mm.
Mm. It was what?
Yeah. Now that's just for Dwight.
I hope you guys didn't love read.
I was like, man, you're gonna get in trouble with Eastern Europeans.
Some people must not be taught English, ne?
Yeah, look,
no, it's not just Eastern Europeans.
Yeah,
it's also how it's pronounced.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
and look,
which is a play on English.
Look, someone wrote in the comment section that please just hand over that phone.
Mm.
Yeah, it's in the wrong hands. Yeah.
I think his whole proposals are in the wrong hands. People must keep it away from him.
Yeah, all his proposals are just ridiculous. I mean, it's a very funny thing.
Mm.
Like a funny way that he just they came up to, to create content. And it's very, not just funny, it's just unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, coming back to the government's response. And look, I like how this parliamentary standing committees, and let me just say, the National Council.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the second one that we're basically going through that sort of like build on the previous, on the previous standing committee of the same mandate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they are looking at, it's more like, they're just continuing from where the previous standing committee left off. I looked I looked at one of the villages that the standing committee visited here.
Mm.
Yeah. And let me just get that again. And one look there's you know, the Zambezi region, the entire terrain is very flood prone.
Well, if you can,
a large chunk of it is very flood prone.
If you want to say flood prone, you can basically call it what's that thing? What's that area where rivers flow into Hamut? Like the delta, like the Okavango Delta, which is
is in Botswana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you call that area, man? It's the same thing basically that the north, here the Oshana, Ohangwena, the parts that flood with that surface water that comes from Angola.
Yeah.
It's that flat. What do you call that? What do you call that?
Okay, now I've just lost.
I've not even lost that. Yeah, it's a floodplain. Yeah, it's a floodplain.
So it's a floodplain.
But a delta,
is
a depression naturally.
Yeah, I think most of these areas are just most of them are depressions, which is why
the water flows. Yeah,
the water flows. It's basically flowing downstream.
Yeah. Downhill. It's on land. Please don't downstream things yet today. It's downhill.
No. It's basically flowing downhill.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If you look at, this is one of the villages that was visited, and that's the village of Lisikili that's referenced here.
Mm.
Because if you look at where the village is on the map and where the Zambezi River is, they are very far apart. Now, that means, the whole plain is very flat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which means, the moment the northern part of Southern Africa, you're talking about, Zambia, DRC for, Zambia and DRC mostly for them, and parts of Angola.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
No, I saw the one photo like this one where they're standing at the standing water.
Yeah. Look, there are a lot of parts that are just close to the Kavango River that also floods.
Yeah.
So, I thought I've seen flood until I found myself, at a place called Giriku. It's just a hundred kilometers or so, not 200 kilometers.
From Divundu?
From Divundu towards when you headed towards Turundu.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The part I visited is in Angola. Now,
Giriku.
It's super flat. So that every time that the water level rises, when the water levels are low, I think the best way I can give you the description is when the water levels are low, you'll find that the river is here.
Mm.
Yeah. And the homesteads are somewhere where you find Hilton Hotel.
Mm.
Yeah. So that means, when the water levels are high, this entire distance is covered with water.
Mm.
So, then it creates a very, interesting way of trying to address that problem because at some parts the distance are even further than that.
Yep.
And as a result, mostly because of trying to have close proximity to water sources, you have now people that will just move close to the main river when the water levels are low, and when the water levels begins to rise, and then they are impacted again by the flood. And I've seen this like 1,000 times. So this also is one of those things that is also addressed in the report, that we should, you find that all the way in the recommendation, a conclusion.
I know.
Yeah.
There's one conclusion that is bothering me slightly.
Which one?
Number 9.2. I'll explain now, but I think you know why I'm saying it, because of what came out last year, regarding drought relief. But I don't know if that was Kavango East or Zambezi Regional Council last year. Last year, Zambezi Regional Council basically ran the risk. I say ran the risk because two staff members were basically implicated in drought relief fraud, and this was to the tune of $4 Namibian dollars. Three, actually, not two people, three. And the concern is, one of the suggestions, one of the recommendations by the standing committee is to establish a disaster fund for the region, whereby the region responds from this fund. But the last time response measure was basically distributed with regards to the opposite of a flood, which is a drought. What did the staff members of this regional council do? They decided to open up investment accounts.
Look, without the right mitigation procedures in place, that's going to happen. I mean, it happened to our fish at central government level. It's going to happen to drought relief on a regional or constituency level.
I know.
Yeah.
Helmut, and that is the problem. If we cascade things and we actually evaluate the performance of regional and local authorities,
mm-hmm.
you are constantly confronted with the question of, so how do you mitigate fraud in the outer reaches of this country?
Oof. I think like that's going to bring us to the same song over and over, decentralization.
No, but that's the that is the risk, you know, from decentralizing.
Yeah.
Because now that if you wish to keep tight leash on budget or budget parameters across the country in order to achieve your development goals, the concern is always there's a few sticky fingers in the regional council.
Yeah, somewhere along the way.
Outside of commas. Let me be honest, outside of commas. And these guys believe that this is their personal slush fund. I mean, remember that our favorite byline, I'm using the word byline because I'm using it like a headline description from South Africa. What happened with that police slush fund? You remember the South African police do if you become a chief in South Africa? A police chief, suddenly someone comes, knocks down your wall, builds you a new wall with money. You don't know where this money comes from. You don't know who the contract is.
Being blackmailed.
All
the
they're
wall
doing is
crazy,
they're blackmailing you through a new wall.
Okay, you know what? All this money that we are stealing, that you are supposed to prevent us from stealing. Yeah.
Well, we spent money on your wall.
Yeah, we used some of it to build a wall for you. So if you rat us out,
you'll
be ratting yourself out.
Just know there are invoices for your wall.
That's
invoices you don't own.
That's diabolical.
It's ugly. But this is the concern, Hamoud. And we have to be honest. When we step into the realm ultimately of the human psyche and the psychological makeup of people, there are people that are just willing. They're willing basically to just dip their fingers into money that is designated for certain response measures. Remember what was the issue with the what was that? The Fisheries Observer Fund? The double what was that term to use in accounting? The double ledger, the double entries.
They're basically
But they couldn't motivate why they moved.
Why the money was moved from one financial year to the next.
No, not the money. Look, if you say money,
yeah.
The action actually happened, and you recorded it at the action.
Uh-huh.
But what was not motivated in that report was why they did not motivate why the money was moved. They motivated why they duplicated the tally from the previous financial year into this year.
Yeah, from 2024, 2025, 2025, 2026.
Exactly. So it's literally a copy and a paste function. It wasn't, okay, the money is there, the money is just cascading into, then the money is in this financial year, you declare it, and then you start a new financial year, and then you then redeclare or you reintroduce the money into a budget. So the money technically is in a function you can motivate. Okay, we redeclared it back at the end of a financial year, it was untouched, we motivated why it was untouched, and then when your new financial year opens up, this money is then just available immediately. But what the Auditor General's office identified in that report was, it was literally a copy and paste function.
Yeah.
With no explanation as to why the same amount is reflecting here as well. Now, That's why I love accounting.
Now, and this, look, and you have to understand, this is taking place where? Central government level.
Yeah.
These
guys are based in at the coast. But there's a central government auditing them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, look, we'll have to sharpen our nail cutter. And when I say our nail cutter, I mean ACC.
You want to go for, that's the label you want to go for.
What are we sharpening? Angle grinders? Because the nail are just there.
Angle grinder is pretty good. Angle grinder makes noise.
You and I must forget getting
it. And it has sparks.
You and I must forget about getting a job in the public sector. Because
Look, you always target the small towns, Almut. You know, when if you decide, let's say, to become the CEO of the Vundu Town Council,
yeah,
people won't know about your past life at Eagle FM.
That's going to be tricky to hide.
No, believe you me. They will just know Helmut was this, you know, this nation famous, you know, radio presenter, but they don't actually know what Helmut was talking about. Or who his accomplice was, aka me.
You're not helping.
Look, it's not like I'm shedding tears at night, you know, for having these conversations. Because here's the concern, Helmut. Our Namibians, our fellow Namibians, don't actually understand what they're doing, or how their actions cause real harm to those that need mitigation measures. For example, this drought relief back in 2025, when this thing was reported. So, just to read you this particular indication once again, the suspects, has been identified. One of them is an employee of the Zambezi Regional Council. And the other two specifically, it doesn't say whether they are, but this means that it was one Zambezi Regional Council staff member and conspired with two private individuals, that's the description, in a fraudulent drought relief food supply scheme, which led to the government paying $4.2 million for food supplies that were never delivered. Now, there obviously is the classic debate about, you know, what defines corruption. If you know you're dealing, the whole discussion has to do with government, and it's you selling a product to government, and government having to pay for the product, but you don't deliver, that's corruption. If you deliver a substandard product versus what you declared you would deliver to the government, that constitutes as corruption. If you get the payment without providing any product of any kind, even though you said you would provide a product, that's corruption. But if you do it to a private citizen, or if you do it to another private entity like a private company, it's up to that other private entity, private company, private person to react in terms of how they, because you can't call it then corruption.
Usually you'll just end up with a civil lawsuit.
Or if you really want to be nasty and you really want to get to this person, you declare it as a theft because you delivered, because you and I know what contract, the law of contract and of purchase and sale constitutes. You identified the good, the three essentials, you identified the good, you identified the place and time for the transaction, and the other person has the money, and you also identified the price. The other person has the money, the buyer, to enact on one side. So now you hand over your money, and that person doesn't hand your product over. So it's either you sue the civil lawsuit, or you report it to the police as theft, because then it becomes a crime.
Yeah.
Because the other person is refusing to act without a reasonable explanation. The big concern from this discussion has been, we sit with lovely suggestions. Yes, you see a flood shows up. Yes. But the question you have to ask yourself is, Helmut, has the government reacted slower vis-a-vis in terms of, dispensing emergency money to respond to a disaster? Or has the government reacted faster if they work from a centralized position versus a regional, localized position, let's say, in the Zambezi region? And so far, I'm really sorry. The Zambezi region has not lived up to adequate public trust expectations because they haven't.
You do realize that's basically the entire country.
Yes. Yes, that's basically the entire. But since we're talking about Zambezi,
yeah.
Zambezi is not living up to this particular public contract. Because the thing that people forget about the regional council is the regional council is actually an organization.
Yeah.
It's an organization that is made up of representatives from central government ministries. So there's an education ministry representative.
Yeah.
Urban and rural development, which is technically also the councillors on the council and the town council of Katima. Works in transport, finance. And then you've got those representatives working with the SOEs that have to also react and to maintain services in the region, like NAMRA. There'd be a NAMRA office coordinating with the Ministry of Finance official in the regional council. They have to coordinate. You'll find a Ministry of Works and Transport person coordinating with a Roads Authority person in the region, because the Roads Authority has a licensing office in each region and in most towns. Now, here's the concern, Helmut. Now, if you've got the distribution on the ground, I'm talking now in commercial sense, like in private sector. If you've got the distribution on the ground, then why do you still have funny business happening? Why are funny things still happening?
I think, we're talking about a report that's coming out of the, of the public sector.
Yeah.
Let's just, let me just use the public sector example. If you just, if you have someone who is in public office, take, a governor, constituency councillor, for example, I think if you find out or if they're implicated in some questionable activities like exchanging, land for cars or stealing fish or, participating in diamond heist, they are fully aware of the negative economic impact and also just the overall take the largest one like Fish Rod, for example.
Yeah.
It's very terrible PR for the country.
I believe there's a larger one than Fish Rod.
We
just don't know it.
Yeah. There's always one.
It's probably the iceberg, ne? It's probably the iceberg that's bigger than the one that sunk the Titanic.
I've seen the documentary, so I just don't want to mention any names. Because I don't have bodyguards. Now,
seriously?
Look, the, what,
in the Namibian context.
No, have you seen the, the Fish Rod documentary?
Because I don't want to laugh at a comedy show.
It is a comedy show.
From the English.
Yeah.
To the, don't.
Yeah, lower your voice.
Lower your voice. We don't want to be on the camera is right here in front.
We don't want to be on the front page.
And then, voila, wishes were made true.
Uh-huh.
People ended up on front pages.
Yeah, multiple times, actually. Look, the thing is, if you look at a lot of people that are implicated in questionable activities with regards to the misuse of public resources, I think they are fully aware that what they are doing is if they take a large chunk of it for their personal gain, it's going to impact a lot of people that are supposed to that actually need these things.
Yeah.
Because more often when drought relief or be it food or medical resources or shelter resources like your tents, for example, are made available,
tents.
Now, take for example you as a and then you have you as a councillor or a governor, for example, you have your own brick house and you're stealing a tent, like. That doesn't make sense. You can't tell me that you don't know that there's someone out there who literally doesn't have a house like you do who is going to be negatively impacted. So, you are fully aware of this. I feel like, you know the consequences of the decision that you are making, both legally and also on a societal level, because there's a recipient that is going to be, left without a tent.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are aware of this, and you just go ahead and do it. And that's just where the, you know, the selfish part and the greedy part of mankind now comes in. You know, that's why, you know, James Madison said, if mankind were angels, no one would need the government. Mm. You know, if you look at human beings as a species, I mean, we are the dumbest, because if you look at it this way. We have laws in place for exactly that. Laws are a very, you know, a result of us not knowing very well that we can't be trusted with ourselves.
We've got laws,
yeah,
to tell ourselves it is wrong to kill a person. It is wrong to trespass in someone else's property.
Like, do you really have it to is be told?
We then had to take it a further step, from the lawmaking,
yeah,
to institute an organization.
The police.
And from this position, they then realized, you can't lodge, you can't make the same organization, what do you call that thing? You can't make the same organization, you can't give them too much power.
Yeah.
Split from them the judiciary.
Because if you give them
if
too much power...
If you give the police too much, you'll have a Judge Dredd, a comic book character situation. Someone who becomes the police, who then becomes the prosecution on the ground and judges you on the same time. So, firstly, they represent the aggrieved parties. Then they judge against you based upon the severity of what you committed. And then they become your executioner.
So that means if you commit a crime against them...
Yeah.
Then you don't stand a chance. Like, this is the most interesting part. And that's why we have organizations like... This is where we have entities like the anti-corruption, for example. Because, you know, the existence of entities like that, and we are not the only country that has them.
Mm.
Yeah. Every country has, a fraud or corruption fighting mechanism in place, because we know someone in public office is gonna do something for personal gratification, and we want to have mechanisms in place to hold them accountable. We are not saying that someone might. We know at some point someone will.
The probability is so high. It's literally 10
that
out
we
of
have
10.
To come up with an organization.
It's literally 100%. That's how high the probability is. It's literally 100%. And you know, earlier today, Hamoud, I read an article in the Afrikaans Daily about the accounts of Rehoboth Town Council.
Yeah.
It always stays... Look, the thing about accounting in some cases, specifically when you come to public administration,
yeah,
I realize that the accounting there works a little bit different. Why do I say it works a little bit different? In the public administration space, there are thresholds. What I realize is there are thresholds. And I didn't even have to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
There are thresholds of acceptability of, let's say, your debtors.
So there's a range.
There's a range.
Of some sort, yeah.
There's a range.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. A town council can't run away and go and hide and avoid paying their responsibilities.
No.
They can't.
No.
In many cases, we voted for the people.
Yeah.
In other cases, the people are actually 8 to 5 administrative workers right there.
Yeah.
Like the CEO and the other admin staff, and then you've got the town council, which are the local council, which are the local political politicians of the community. The concern from this is how you can see basically just maladministration taking place.
Yeah.
And when I say mal, it's like you can basically see how the internal machinations are not reinforced. They probably don't have enough staff to commit to doing the work as efficiently as what you would expect.
Yeah.
And then it's always this recurring theme. And I mean, Helmut, since when we stayed there in the 90s, this town council has been dogged with the same accusations. Firstly, if you realize, now why do you have a massive outstanding account with the utilities? That's now NAM Water and NAM Power.
Yeah.
Then you go ask the second question, because then you have to take the opposite view. Remember, NAM Water, NAM Power are creditors. That's who you owe.
Yeah.
If you go and you look at, okay, so what do the debtors, the customers of this jurisdiction, what do they owe you? And then you could realize, but why are you sitting with 280 million?
In debt.
In backdated debt. Backdated means it's like It just accumulates over a period of time. The person might decide to pay once here just to, you know, smile face and buy face and stuff like that.
And
then they forget for another 6 months to pay. And then they decide to make a small lump sum there, but it doesn't actually appease the outstanding before this first payment that was supposedly done in good faith.
Yeah.
And every time they just react when you send the disconnection department to go and disconnect the services. And then they want to come and pay. It's actions like this, guys. I know what you Namibians get up to. I know what you guys get up to. Just pay your services. But here's the concern. Now you start working. Let's for example say. And that was the argument of what... And I like that argument back in 2022, when Alpium had the massive fallout with the former Minister of Urban and Rural Development, Erastus Otoni, about Keetmanshoop's books. And accounting is the best evidence you can ever have, Helmut. When I tell you this, it's like DNA evidence in a court, in an actual crime. Ne? And then all that Swartboy did in that press conference, and I remember he just took out the books. The biggest creditors were all the government. But the concern was, obviously, that the threat was about disconnecting the residents of the town. Now, the residents, obviously, are not the ones with the massive volumes of consumption.
Yeah.
It was actually all the government offices, ministries, and agencies.
Okay, now the part I don't seem to wrap my mind around when it comes to things like that is, you read about a lot of public entities returning money to treasury almost if not every year.
Yeah, but that's the previous explanation I gave you, the one about the fisheries observatory.
Yeah,
fisheries observation.
Fisheries observer fund.
Observer fund.
Yeah,
those guys. What happens in a when you get. When you've got a subsidy, when you've got a big brother or a parent helping you, for public administration, there's something you are selling that accumulates a fee, meaning you're making some sort of a revenue.
Yeah.
But the revenue doesn't feed your operations. You are accumulating this revenue in the aspect of declaring it back to your parent, the ministry.
Yeah.
Let's, for example, say with Fishery Observer, it would have been like Ministry of Fisheries.
Yeah.
So you're declaring, you're making the money, you're declaring it to the ministry. The ministry then says, okay, let's see what is your annual financial year operational budget. And then the other add-ons to your budget. So your operational budget is, this is your salaries, this is your water and electricity per month, this is your tax deductions. Because if you do salaries, you must budget for tax deductions.
Yeah.
If you do tax deductions, you must do social security contributions. Then you must do, what's the other one? Medical aid. Then you've got to do water and electricity, which are the other operational things. The biggest chunk usually in operations is salaries and the things around salaries.
Yeah.
Then they budget from that. And if there's a shortfall, the ministry then asks, you know, an agency like, okay, so why is there a shortfall? What happened? Then they supply statistics. Let's say it's Fish Job Service Fund. Not all the fishing companies declared their what you call it, let's say their fishing quotas or stuff like that. You know, I'm just making up an example, dear listeners. And then they give that information, and they keep that information for the moment when the Auditor General shows up. Now, here's a funny thing with our SOEs. Our SOEs, David. Hi, Helmut, sorry. Our SOEs have an external auditor. And in some cases, they also get audited internally in terms of the money, the budgets that they get from their parent ministries or their line ministries.
Yeah.
So they would have an auditor on one side, and then they would have an external auditor.
Internal and external.
There would be the government auditing in terms of what is declared from a ministry this way. And then in some cases, they might have an external auditor that audits them. Here's the funny thing with your question. If we get to local authorities, does this but just an extension of a ministry? So you have to think in ministerial actions. So a local authority is technically, they're not even a going concern. Actually, when you look at the public sector's whole, their whole view, and this is why I love the explanation that the British economist, what's his name, the lecturer, Richard Murphy explained.
Yeah.
Because Richard Murphy had an explainer earlier this year when I started following him on YouTube with his channel. He explained people and especially policy advisors must stop explaining that the government needs to cut down on debt. The only debt, Helmut, that is the best debt in the world that can help your economy actually thrive is if it's government debt. So what am I talking about this? Let's, for example, say that recommendation in 9.2 in this report, né, about disaster risk funds for every region. And the Prime Minister Ngulale, now goes and motivates this in Parliament. But not only Parliament, he also has to motivate it to the President and the Cabinet and the Cabinet meetings. I think which are weekly meetings. And he goes and proposes this idea. Not as weird as that Kenyan, content creator. Not as weird as that guy, but he goes and proposes.
It's not weird, he's creative.
He goes and pitches these ideas now at the necessary public forums where, you know, decision-making happens and where buy-in and consensus would be needed. So now, they then decide, okay, let's decentralize this disaster risk mechanism that is contained within the Ministry within the Office of the Prime Minister. The Office of the Prime Minister then has to look at, okay, what other functional elements would you need in order for a regional authority to respond as well? So now they say money. Then they say from money you need extra equipment, for example, let's say trucks to respond, or you need extra specially trained staff like fire brigade staff, extra emergency response staff emergency medical technicians. What do they call an EMT? Emergency medical. Okay, let's use the word technician, because they also work with equipment. All these are people there that are highly trained. All these are people that can adequately respond from a flood to a fire to a sick or someone with an injury under, you know, unique circumstances that are declared as disasters. But I ask you now, if you drive into the regions, Helmut, how many fire brigades will you count?
Oof.
This town that I'm complaining about, hometown of mine, they don't have a fire brigade.
So in other words, if your house catches fire, maybe
it's your house, it's your neighbor's house, because there's a lot of trees.
Yeah.
So the aspect is usually the community has to respond.
Eesh.
The police are not the fire brigade, so don't think about that. And unless there's a death, because the police are the only people that can declare a death as being not having, you know, the person's death doesn't have any
foul play
or funny circumstances that they observed. If it's not them, it's a doctor. If it's not a doctor, then it's a coroner,
coroners are involved in there.
The other people, the ones that help you with your burial and funeral arrangements. What do you call those guys, man? I almost said the mortician. What do you call those people?
You almost
the the funeral house.
You almost said the mortician. I almost said the undertaker.
Yeah, the undertaker. But I realized the mortician and the coroner are basically the same person. So the undertaker, they also have some sort of a leeway.
With that term, though, which, I mean, it's very brutal.
Well, if...
I mean, I know they're taking me under, but did you really have to point it out? Right?
I think it's a British term primarily because undertakers were usually just like executioners back in the medieval times. This was a specific person who everybody, if it was in Africa, everybody would have thought this guy is jinxed. His whole family, his ancestors, his bloodline, his people before him, his people to come from him, His kids.
Oh no, that was the case for a lot of, which is why they always kept their faces covered.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine you were ostracized in society if people knew that you separated people's heads from their bodies for a living.
Or you were the guy who, you know, unfortunately, you know, dug the hole for somebody else's loved one. But yeah, so if you go do just look, just a basic stock, and this is like stock taking, you could just go do a basic stock take, Helmut.
Yeah.
In the rest of the region for fire brigades and then ambulance services. And I'm not talking about ambulance services even from Ministry of Health facilities.
Yeah.
People who opened up businesses, emergency service businesses in each region. I will tell you, it will be, I'm telling you now, Helmut, once again, it'll be Comas and Irongo and what is the region where Oshakati is based? On Oshana. Is it Oshana? Yeah, it's Oshana. Because we did Oshana. They've got.
Oh, yeah.
We did Oshana. The standing. Not the stand, the governor's address.
1,000 jobs created.
No, the 122.
122
permanent jobs. Yes, and Oshakati Town Council employed 122 new people.
There were about 21 permanent jobs. And I think.
It's 120 permanent. 120. And it was 1,000 temporary. That was the scale. Did your leave take you? And all the 120 ne were in Oshakati Town Council. Now, you will find, for example, in Ongwediva Town Council, you will find a fire brigade installation there. I don't know if Marintal has, which is a administrative capital of Hartab. I can assume that. Kitmansoop has, yeah, as the administrative capital of Karas.
Yeah.
I can assume maybe Ochivrongo has. I say maybe, and it's a stretch, because I've only really driven through Ochivrongo. Look, if you drive through Marintalne,
mm-hmm,
you see everything from the road.
You don't have to stop.
You don't have to stop. Your only stop might probably be there for the toilet, the wimpy, refuel
and proceed.
You're on your way.
Yeah.
But if you literally stop in Marintal and you just turn around on the same spot, you've seen Marintal. I'm sorry, Marintal. I know. That's my surname comes from that area, but I'm not from that area. I'm sorry, guys.
It's a good thing you're the one on camera.
I think all the Namibian lynxes will go and say, who is this guy? Who is this lynx? Talking all the smack about Marintal. Listen, I'm sorry, guys. I'm not from your place. I'm really not from Marintal.
You're not helping your case, good.
I don't have to care. I don't have to care. Now, the concern there with identifying just the infrastructure, Helmut, is a basis of potentially motivating, for example, like this decentralization discussion. But the big talking point that I was citing was how you need to look at public debt. You see, people who love bad-mouthing the government, specifically about the government's finances.
Mm-hmm.
Helmut, if you wanted a sure bet, if I gave you $1 million right now, which I don't have on my name, but if I give you $1 million right now, Helmut, and you had an option of deciding, must I buy into a company's shares on a stock exchange,
mm-hmm,
or must I buy Namibian government bonds?
If
this can be a treasury bill, or it can just be a regular bond.
Well, if your goal is security and assurance, more often government bonds comes in handy in that one.
Yeah. I don't know what the owner of a company is going to think of company,
because a lot of that information is going to be proprietary.
Exactly. And that owner is not always going to be fully transparent with the stockbroker who's representing my $1 million or your $1 million when you buy shares on a stock exchange of a company.
Yeah.
You don't know. Because that guy and his CEO can collude and then run away with the money to South Africa, and then it's another headache of recuperating the finances.
Yeah.
But if you take your million and you put it in a government bond, and I'm not giving financial advice, please, guys. I'm not. please, just to let you know.
I think the, you know, the right way to put it is the central bank didn't pay him to say that.
Exactly. Yeah. And you put that million on government bonds now. Helmut, I mean, hell would need to freeze over there for the Namibian government to actually fail. And I'm literally meaning it. Hell would need to freeze over. And when has hell frozen over?
When someone who have tried both construction and painting fails and they take over the government?
No, Helmut. When hell freezes over, it has never happened.
Yeah.
Which is never. Now, just to get back to the discussion of like public debt. Public debt is debt that helps you and me on the ground. So for the detractors that need to come and say, or that come to, let's say, a national parliament or national assembly or national council discussion and say, yeah, government needs to manage its debt. But then I love the ideas like in these recommendations, in these reports that we've been covering, where they actually encourage more government debt. If they encourage more government debt, Hamoud, this means you can actually see your government active on the ground.
Yeah, look, I think when it comes to debt, the debt is not the problem. It's how the borrowed money is being used. If you, you know, if you go if you go full Mozambique with it, then that's a terrible idea.
Okay. Look. I knew Mozambique would creep up.
It will pop up every now and then.
But that's why I localized it to Zambezi, you know? I almost said Franz and Abigail's people. That's why I localized it to Zambezi.
Franz can walk in here at any time.
He's gonna give me a phone call right now. But that's why you localize it to a region, right? Yeah. But here's the nuance.
Yeah.
And this is the nuance about knowing data, or having the data being disclosed. We also now need to know. Either Minister Sankwasa has to start implementing this measure, where these regional authorities actually, not just the governor reporting state of the region things, because the governors are presidential appointments. The minister has to work with the councils of the regions.
Yeah.
That these regional councils have to then give information and data over to the minister, submitted to the minister. All those councillors represent a local authority. Those data sets need to correspond to those local authority data sets. Because the moment the Auditor General's office walks into your region, and your things don't correlate with what you are reporting here, well,
now you're
fill in the gaps, guys. Yes, as you guys can see, me sitting with my arms spread like this, or sitting spread eagle with my arms like this.
Yeah.
You know, what do people expect? But yeah.
Okay. There are actually several things I like about these new reports, and I was actually looking forward to them. We're going to come back to page 4, but I would just like to go way up. So this is a national council. That is basically building the national council standing committee that is building on the previous standing committee of the same mandate with regards to looking at some of the most common disasters in Namibia, which is flooding is one of them, especially amongst in the northern parts of the country, and how to respond to them, and most importantly, how have we been responding? And then they picked different villages to go and assess as in how many people were affected and mostly like a central government and basically all the entities that are involved in responding at situations like that, which more often basically the central responder to that would be the office of the prime minister. That's where the National Council Standing Committee on Agriculture, Environment and Natural Resource, Environment and Natural Resources, and on health, social welfare, and labor affairs. Now, that's why I just, Now I decided to shorten it they have an abbreviation here. So believe me, I shortened it to that's
just read it out.
Yeah. So forget the short abbreviation that I cooked up while reading this whole thing. So now let's go to page 4.
Yeah.
On page 4, they're explaining something that I find interesting, because one of the places that they visited was a place called Lisikili, and this was the Lisikili relocation site.
Mm.
And this is where, obviously, when the place where the people usually stay are flooded during high water level season, then they are relocated to sort of like elevated areas.
Mm.
And now, when they visited this area, they did point out one thing. Like, if the last paragraph on page 4 says to help address these shelter demands, the regional council contributed 4. Communal tent and four communal tents and 60 mattresses. This is just for one affected area.
Mm.
4 communal tents and 60 mattresses. While these provisions offered essential immediate relief, they fell short of the total requirements of 144 affected households. Look, that's just one place. Now, the delegation visited the villages. Some of the villages visited by the delegations also just listed up on page 4.
Mm.
And under number 5, that is Lisikili, and you have Luhonono, and you have Malindi, which were among the areas that were affected by the flood. And they did all this. They did all this excursion back in May. So that's when they were gathering all this information and then compiled it into a 29-page report that we now have to look at. Now, what they needed was 144 affected households, not affected individuals. Affected households. You have 144 affected households. And our solution to that was 4 communal tents and 60 mattresses. And 144 affected people, 60 mattresses would have been, a fair solution. But when you're talking about households, and when you're talking about households in Africa, I'm picturing extended level type of household, because, well, the nuclear family is a phenomenally new concept, not just for the Western world, basically for the entire world. Although the whole thing is mostly something that is, it's a basically Western concept, and it's an interesting and somewhat also depressing way of defining a family, when you just take all the uncles out of the equation and reduce the definition of a family to mother, father, son, basically parents and the kids that they have and a couple of their friends, basically parents and the kids that they have. It's another way of looking at the concept of looking at a family, but it has its own pros and cons in the modern society, especially economic wise. One thing that's also pointed out here is that the Joint Committee conducted a field assessment at Lisikili relocation site to monitor the living conditions of community members displaced after their homes sustained structural damage from floods. At the time of the visit, several residents were observed returning to their original properties to begin a repair and reinforce their houses. The relocation process presented administrative and logistical challenges, particularly regarding temporary shelter and food supply, due to resources constraints and in securing communal tents. Many displaced households constructed temporary structures using plastic sheetings and stuff. Now, that's when it comes down to the sheer shortage of resources available to respond to just that one particular place. And so 4 communal tents and 60 matras, that was a response to 144 households, not individuals, not 144 individuals, 144 households. The shortage is just, it's just too wide of a gap. Now, that's why when you go to recommendations, they did point out something, conclusion, that in conclusion, the oversight assessment conducted by the Joint Committee highlights a clear need for a more integrated, long-term approach to seasonal flooding management. Because we can't just, we can't have tents at bay forever.
Well, okay, like fully opened up, fully installed, indeed, we can't have them forever.
Yeah.
But just think back to yesterday's discussion, Helmut, the one about the potential for heavy rainfall to hit Southern Africa from, let's assume from this month to December, ne?
Yeah.
Now, if you remember back to that disclaimer segment where the experts were saying, don't take it as the
100% certainty.
Yeah, 100% certainty that you might or you might not.
Yeah.
Specifically because they ran models. But a model is based upon up-to-date information.
Yeah.
Now, let's say your information deviates greatly between yesterday and today. Yesterday, it said potentially that, for Jan to March, Namibia is not going to get much rain. Yeah. And suddenly, today's information says, Namibia is going to be facing Noah's Ark builder and construction activity in the first half of next year. And the opposite could happen for the September to December time frame. Now, let's say this activity, knock on wood, not jinxing anyone. So let's say the same flooding happens again in the same vicinity in Zambezi region. If this flooding comes back again, right?
Yeah.
The regional council will have to answer specific questions to Office of the Prime Minister in terms of, in terms of what kind of mitigation strategies can you guys bring? One of the recommendations given there is that OPM and the regional council has to benchmark against international mitigation or disaster risk management frameworks. But Spain, back in last year, their early warning system failed. It literally failed. Things started sending SMSs to run for the hills while the water was around their kneecaps.
Basically, it didn't fail. It worked. It just worked a little late.
Hiya. Helmut, that's not an answer. You can't say a little late. The SMS did come late.
They were warned. When they were already in world flooded.
Exactly. So, if we look at international best practice.
Okay, if you look at it that way, then technically it did fail.
It did fail.
Miserably.
So, because properties were damaged, other particular private possessions were damaged, like cars and the likes, and people actually lost lives. And in some cases, the response services couldn't react quick enough, which is the concern, which you basically described now, for example, with that need for 144 households, right? That was, the emergency services couldn't respond quick enough. Now, here's the thing. A national councillor, an MP from Windhoek, or in many cases, some of them would come from the Zambezi region, they would have a perspective of be quicker than lightning response. This is impossible, guys. First and foremost, you can't send safety crews out while the disaster is happening.
Yep.
You are exposing them also to the same risk. That's why early warning systems are usually used. And early warning systems depend upon electricity and communication infrastructure. Now, if that fails, unfortunately, you have to wait. Yes, guys, I'm explaining a situation. This is not even like with the American Coast Guard. The American Coast Guard is most, what's that movie that I once watched? But it's actually a motto they have. And it's apparently the Navy doesn't like it when the American Coast, the American Navy doesn't like it when the American Coast Guard uses this motto against them.
What motto?
We go where the Navy doesn't go.
So this technically means these guys go into a war, into something that potentially is not even close to a war zone, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, Helmut. Those guys are paid for it. That's the American Coast Guard. This, what we're talking about is a localized Namibian context of the Regional Council of Zambezi. And does the region, and the question that I asked you a little bit earlier, if you decide now today to go get in a car and you drive through the whole of the Zambezi region and you go look for emergency services, which are owned by the public sector. So I'm talking about a fire brigade, and I'm talking about a ambulance with emergency medical responders. You won't find them in abundance. In many cases, it'll be the police to one side, which is under Ministry of Health and Safety and Security, Ministry of Home Affairs, Safety and Security, and you'll find the ambulance staff under Ministry of Health. Ministry of Health needs is Ministry of Health needs. Let's be honest. Ministry of Health needs is Ministry of Health needs. So the regional council has to invest in its own infrastructure. So if the regional council wants fire brigade operators, they have to pay these guys a danger allowance, a danger subsidy. What's that thing? It's like a risk. It's almost like a massive insurance pay.
Fire allowance?
But it's like danger allowance. But you get it like a lump sum every year. It's probably... And how I sometimes view it when I heard that story was... It seems like it's an incentive for saying thank you for staying alive. That's... Okay, that's the dark side of that joke that I realized. It's like saying thank you for staying alive long enough.
Thank you for not dying in the line of duty.
Exactly. So... This is what these councils have to consider. Because, Helmut, with our discussion yesterday of heightened dry conditions, fires are going to become a lot more common. Look, the bushfire phenomena is already something common in Namibia. But let's, for example, say we have bushfires in certain parts of this country and we've got flooding risks in other parts of this country. So... The particular balance here is, yes, I agree with some of the recommendations.
Yeah.
Invest in localized response and disaster risk infrastructure in a region. But it means these own regional councils have to go and take stock of what they've got and what they can improve on. Because many Namibians, we are tired of hearing about, you know, some... regional staff members from the regional councils deciding to open up investment opportunities from money that's meant to be good for the greater good of the community. So in many cases, Namibians are sick and tired of that. So it also means doing or implementing the best calculated strategy that makes sense for the money that the government would have to invest.
There's the conclusion they draw, more like the point they make in the conclusion. The first part is the one that I read earlier about coming up with more of a long-term approach to seasonal flood management. Mm. And the next part that comes after that is says while the immediate interventions by the Office of the Prime Minister, the Regional Council, and various line ministries provide essential relief in the form of food, shelter, and medical supplies. The scale of this year's flood tested the limits of existing resources. The challenges observed across the relocation sites, ranging from shelter shortfalls and food distribution gaps to public health concerns and education disruption, underscores that treating annual flood as an unpredictable emergency is no longer practical, because it is a predictable emergency. If you have predictions that are telling you that you are going to receive a high rainfalls, for example, that's to be expected. And we know that most of this water is obviously most of the water is coming from the northern part of southern Africa. We're talking about central parts, parts of DRC, DRC and northern Zambia. Although that would northern Zambia, most of that would end up in Mozambique. But the proposal for a long term strategy. A country that is more often, praised for being very good at dealing with floods. One of, because it's the only one I know, and I'm pretty sure maybe there's some out there, is the Netherlands. They literally build this structure that you're looking at here.
A dike, yes.
Yeah, that. Now, you can imagine.
Say it, Helmut.
A
dike.
Dike. That's what it's called. Nice.
Yeah, but when you pronounce in Afrikaans, dike.
Dake.
Yeah.
You see, a structure like that would be an excellent permanent solution, but you can imagine the cost in infrastructure itself and the engineering that goes in there. Well, I would argue, financially we are not there yet.
You do know where they built that thing, right?
So they don't flood?
No, how?
Mm-hmm.
They built that thing because in the 1400s.
Yeah.
They needed agricultural land. Have you ever heard of draining the sea?
Yeah, but that was
or reclaiming. The phrase is known as reclaiming land from the sea.
Yeah,
the Netherlands was the first country that championed land reclamation. So, for Namibians out there, the engineering exists already. Land reclamation is you literally go build that dike.
Yeah,
and you drain the water. So you build it in the sea.
Yeah.
You drain the excess water on the side of the dike that's closest to land. You drain it out. Then you rehabilitate the land, basically, to till the land into, convert it into agricultural land.
Yeah.
Making it productive land. Now, the Dutch have been running maintenance of the dikes since Elizabeth I.
Since they were selling people and spice. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. The selling people and spice came just after her, after she became Queen of England.
Mm.
Since then. So this is more than 700 years of engineering working.
Yeah.
Here's the concern. Zambezi's issue is similar to the Netherlands, which is the Netherlands. What's the other name for the Netherlands? Holland. Holland. Or actually, if you look at the name of the Netherlands, and you ask the question, does that name mean? It's technically, they're describing an aspect of a floodplain. The name technically is like describing a floodplain, a country of floodplains.
Uh-huh.
That's the reason why it's known as the country of canals also.
Yeah.
Because it's got so many rivers and canals. So they know they've got all this water, not just fresh water, but also the risk of
seawater. Oh.
That's why the engineering also comes specifically from that part of Northern Europe. And when you look at what can you potentially adopt in a Namibian context, an early warning system.
One that you can afford.
Yes, one that you can afford, one that you can apply through local engineering and local engineering costs, because engineering is a danger, is an, not dangerous, it is an expensive.
It's expensive, yeah.
So in a local engineering context, what can you apply?
In terms of a permanent solution, because look, they keep talking about a permanent solution, but they are not giving an example of from our observation, or at least maybe a permanent solution like take for example this country has experienced this type of problem, because I don't think we are the only country dealing with flood problems.
Mm.
How are other countries addressing these issues in terms of long term solution as they propose?
Okay, how do you describe yesterday's example of Nepal?
Oof.
A once-in-a-lifetime severe flooding incident.
Yeah.
How do you describe that then, let's say, to a lawmaker? Now, I just quickly tried to look up how many times
Nepal.
Zambezi flooded.
Ooh, flooded. Yeah.
So there was back in 2020, There was 2023.
Oh, Zambezi has been flooding for us.
I would say 2022, 2023. There was back in last year, 2025. Because remember, this flood took place at the start of this year, 2026. There was back in 2022. There was back in 2024, potentially. 2007 was another particular period. 2009, apparently, was also another period. So you can immediately see the image. Okay, so Zambezi is a flood-prone area.
Yeah.
Zambezi's biggest issue is that what you described already, how excess rainfall that Namibia is not receiving, that is falling in Zambia and in DRC and in Angola, impacts the
northern parts of
Namibia.
Of Namibia.
Now, you obviously, and this is also one of the particular troubling things by local officials in the regions, if they go and tell local community members, please don't stay there, please don't live there, please don't open, please don't install your family in that piece of land, then the responses they get from those rural communities and the rural community members are you prohibiting me from exercising my rights?
Now,
it's either rights to survival, rights to practicing subsistence farming, or rights to just basically trying to survive. Do you see that floodplain? Do you see that floodplain, Helmut?
Yeah, this is the Kavango Delta.
That's the delta.
Yeah.
So if but you just scroll up.
Right here.
Yeah.
Now that is, look, this is, now this is why I think addressing the flood issues, especially in the Zambezi region, is going to be a very challenging thing for the government.
No, because, but we can't build dikes, remember. Do you know why?
One, they are expensive as heck.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because we would be denying the delta from being
Botswana.
Yeah, you we can't build dikes.
Actually, that makes sense.
Which is once again getting back to the Kavango Link discussion with Chris Brown and John Mendelson.
Yeah.
Where they both described, you know, Namibia sits in a precarious position specifically with its neighbor Botswana because Botswana is very serious on its tourism. Namibia enjoys a little bit of a privileged position of its tourism, meaning we've got a lot more things to benefit from tourism than Botswana. Botswana just has the delta.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the Zambezi River, for example, if you just look at the map, if you look at starting from Sesheke going northwards, where it's flowing from in Zambia,
yeah,
you see that there is you just see a green strip that's labeled basically Zambezi River, and you have what seems to be the indication of pretty highlands on both sides, but as you cross, as you cross from Sesheke. And now, from Sesheke all the way to, all the way to Sililo, you see that, the river spreads in more of like a desert, like a delta form.
Mm.
Yeah. It's really creating, a lot of streams and that delta type of shape, now becomes, bigger as it progresses, that by the time that you get to Mushekwa, it's just one giant delta.
Yeah,
it's I'm telling you, it's one giant delta. So you're basically living in a delta and trying to avoid flooding. It's a delta. It's gonna flood.
So
now
it's
that
basically
means
a highway,
exactly.
And there's always going to be a peak time of traffic running through where you're going to be living. Or let's say where your village is.
Exactly. So the issue here, I think, when it comes to flooding, all you just have to do is look up, look at the Zambezi River from Sesheke southeastwards. As it goes southeastwards, it's like because you have the river which seems to be which is basically labeled as the Zambezi River, which is like now at the Namibia Zambia border, But then you have this whole entire plain here, which is not part of the Zambezi River. It's not part of the river, but it's just indicating that it's all covered in green, which means it's a very, very low plain. Oh, there's a plain.
It's called a delta. Don't you see the here on the edges? Do you see this savanna color here?
It's one giant delta.
It's
and
a delta.
And you have all these little streams that are running on the side, and you have all these are basically villages.
Yeah.
Wait, there's Kayanga.
There's people living.
Yeah, there are people living in all this area. And the one interesting thing is that you have all these like deltas, and branch away streams. That then merges and then just form one one river that goes into, where's this river going? Okay, it's just going to Livingstone, Zambia.
Yeah, to the Vic Falls.
Yeah, and you have your Vic Falls here. Oh boy, but the Zambezi, the Zambezi region, especially all these villages that you see here, sits on a very, they're basically sitting on a delta.
Yeah. Now.
And
These MPs went and explained to this community member.
No, look, this is their challenge, whether they want to, to acknowledge it in the report. This is their challenge.
Yeah.
They have, we have a large part, you have a large part of the Zambezi region that is sitting on a very low plain that is practically a delta that where flooding is going to happen all the time because of how low the plain is. Unless you have to move all these villages where you have Kave and Vukalo, a lot of them are going to tell you, this is where my grandmother lived and my entire generation, so I'm not moving.
Yeah, because you can see here where the savanna coloring is, the brownish color is.
Yeah.
Not there in the deep green where you are now currently. Just pull it back. That's high. That's higher ground.
Yeah, this looks like it's higher ground.
Yeah, and you can see basically how it flows into that delta, that deep green. Helmut, it's a flat plain.
Yeah, it's a very flat plain.
It's a massive flat plain. That's not a delta. Do you see how elongated it is? It even flows like this to West Botswana.
Botswana is going to be this side. Hang on a second.
Yeah, because if we find the delta.
Yeah, Botswana is here.
Yeah.
That is your...
But there, I think there's a mountain range there, I think. There's somewhere. There where the cursor is, I think that's a mountain range there.
Yeah, the less green ones, it's obviously indicating highlands, but the dark green ones is only because this is a satellite view. The dark green ones are telling you this is a lot of green vegetation taking place, which means a lot of water,
which is the delta.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if it has a lot of water, that means when the water levels in the Zambezi region arises, all that water spills and flows down downwards and spills into that whole giant plain. Now you have the Office of the Prime Minister and pretty much the entire Namibian government has a large chunk of the country's population living in these areas, and they have to address flooding in a flat plain.
Wait, that's potentially, what's the ratio, the distance ratio? You'll see there in the corner, something to 1,000 or something to 1,000,000.
You want to look at the square kilometers?
Yeah, because I suspect that's probably a 500 square kilometer area. That entire floodplain there is potentially 500 square kilometers.
It's a large one.
It's a massive. It's a massive area.
It's a massive area, because if you look at holy cow,
maybe 300 to 400. 4 kilometers, maybe.
Now, hang on a second. Let me just look up. Yeah, Lisikili. Now, just one of the villages that they visited is going to pop up somewhere in this area, and that village was Lisikili, I believe. Yeah, it's right here. Oh no, that one is just.
But there's the river. Do you see it?
Yeah, this is the river. This is one of those places they visited, which
But it's on high ground. Do you see?
It looks like it's on high ground, but all this is obviously showing you that when the water levels are high, water is flowing in all
because you can see the way the water was flowing.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can see this. There's the river. There's the whole floodplain.
Now let's just measure the distance from Lisikili to Zambezi. From Lisikili to where the Zambezi River is.
How much is that?
That's 7.92 kilometers.
Okay.
So but you have a 7 kilometer distance. Now, you 7 kilometer distance from the main river, but you have these streams here.
Mm-hmm.
That I think this is what's channeling much of the water. But if you look at the Zambezi region is just one very agriculturally excellent place. But living on the other hand is a whole different discussion because all this green that you see means water is saying exaliocre. And
look, I still want to know that.
Yeah.
How is it that the wild animals know when the rain is coming, but it's just us humans who don't know when the rain is coming?
No, look, wild animals build with some insane engineering instinct.
Which is the question of how do they, because you never hear in these particular reports X amount of wild animals died or perished because of floodwaters. No. You hear agricultural animals and they're humans.
Yeah, look.
And then in between, people's kids go and climb into baobab trees and then fall out of the tree, like in this report.
You know that dike example I proposed? Mm. Yeah, that's not going to work.
It's not going to happen.
Nope. Not only is it expensive, it's not for this terrain. I mean, it's too wide of a plain.
Yeah.
You'll have to come up with a dike the size of the entire region.
Helmut, just from that, where you currently are now with the cursor.
Yeah.
The point to your right. That pink point on the river.
This one here?
To the right.
Oh,
yeah.
you have your Caprivi River Lodge here.
Yeah, that lodge specific, that second lodge, the one just below, yeah.
Is it Judah, seriously? anyway.
So anyway, from that lodge, right?
Yeah, from Caprivi or Judah?
Judah.
Okay.
From that particular Judah,
Do you see how the
rest of the branch outs of the river happens?
Yeah.
So that means in the next 100 years, that river, which is running there as a border
between Zambia and Namibia,
will generate a second river
run through,
running in a straight line like this, like how you just now pulled the cursor.
Yeah,
it'll run in a straight line like this.
Why?
Because as a river meanders, do you see the meandering points?
Uh-huh. Meaning those jagged points that the river make.
It's washing away some.
Exactly.
Oh, so carving a new path.
So in the near future, technically, a new river might form from there where Judah is.
Yeah,
it's either Judah or you see the very first of those four lodges, the first one there.
You have
there where that island is, there where you are.
You have 3 palms.
Yeah, there are 3 palms. That river will just decide to smash all the way through in a straight line. To where it ends here in the east. So, in future, if anybody is living between where the current Namibian border, the Zambezi River is, where how we see it right there, and where that potential new line would be, cutting in a straight line, it'll create an island.
Yeah, dude, this whole place is just, you have Simasiku, Malindi, Kalundu, and you have Sifuha,
you have Kasaha, you have Kasimbo. All these places are just flooded.
They will be cut off.
They are just flood prone. Like they are very low. They are very plain. Like not just they are very flat planes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you follow the Zambezi River, basically, when you follow it from Sisheke to Kazungula, when you follow it from Sisheke to Kazungula, it's just a place that is, if you look at the satellite map, what Mother Nature is telling you that this place, as long as, it's raining heavily in parts of DRC, Northern Zambia, and water levels are high, this place can be flooded.
Yeah.
So now I think the more I look at this report, the more I begin to look at central government, or more like central basically leadership, and go like, yeah, I don't think I can do this.
Mm.
That is the issue that these guys are dealing with. When we say how can we deal with flooding in this country? That's what we are looking at.
Yeah.
Now, and I've never actually looked up how flat the terrain is, and why it's which basically explains why the place is flood prone. Yeah. And you have also some parts here, and this is this is still Namibia. Where you have Muketela.
Mm.
There you have Muketela, you have Sangwali, or the side of Sangwali. Also, it's also very green from the satellite map, which means high water levels are just going to mean a flood. And now that's just in the Zambezi region, and this is not the only region that suffers floods. But from the look of things, if you look at the terrain, it suffers the most because of how how flat the plain is. And the most interesting part is the part of Oshikango and parts of Otapi. If you look at this plain, also shows some kind of like during high water levels, there's some kind of floods happening. There's some kind of water curved pathways.
It's super flat.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Ham?
That was an accident.
Look at all the hand created earth dams. Do you see all the earth dams?
Very creative. Anyway.
In the Unamabians, ne? But you can see, do you see the path? Literally there, between the Kunene and the Kavango River. Do you see the floodplain? You can basically see how the surface water flowed into Namibia.
Yeah.
Or flows into Namibia.
You know, Office of the Prime Minister and this standing committee, I feel pity for you guys.
Your job is even more difficult.
Your job is more difficult than I thought.
I'm sorry, guys. The job is even more, and that's the reason why, specifically when we get to have a look at these reports that these MPs go and do. Look, they have they obviously act in good faith as MPs, because these are real needs, real communities.
And real communities impacted and they need.
With a negative, there's obviously some sort of a negative thing. Even like yesterday's discussion. No, not yesterday. Was it yesterday? Was it Monday? The one about the Hubbly Bubbly.
I know that's Monday.
Monday was Hubbly Bubbly.
Yesterday was
And Monday's one was also you could see it was in good faith. The whole engagement was based in good faith because they're obviously building from another position of the previous standing committee from the previous National Council. The concern that you can immediately see is that these are MPs who have to understand an international issue. The hookah, the Hubbly Bubbly thing, is an international issue as well.
Yeah.
Is a human psychology issue. Is a societal issue. And it's a nuanced societal issue. Why? Because we've got various ethnicities. Now,
one of the key concerns is that this is not the same standing committee, for example, like in the Habli Babli case, the previous report, the one when they went to Comas, Hardap and Irongo. It's not the same standing committee.
Yeah.
It's a separate standing committee. It's separate members. It might be the same committee by name, but it's not the same people in terms of the composition.
Yeah.
So too also...
Not the same from the previous one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So too also that this same standing committee, this one that went to the Zambezi region to look at the impacted communities there, they're obviously approaching this from, in the event something goes wrong, how should we look at this discussion? But they're not coming from this perspective from, is this a climate change related disaster? Is this a poor planning disaster? Is this a...
Are we not responding properly?
Are we not responding properly? Are we not putting measures in place to avoid such flooding? Meaning, what are we saying? What are we talking to Zambia with regards to potentially building some sort of reinforced riverbanks that can accommodate heightened volumes of water? Yeah, but how do you do that if the rest of the Zambezi region is one massive floodplain for this particular river? And the whole particular thing is that you technically shouldn't try to box Mother Nature in, because now Mother Nature finds ways around you.
What solution? What long-term solution do you come up with?
There's nothing, Hamoud. The possible best scenario is if you involve some sort of innovative, let's rather say some sort of innovative construction methods. For example, not building on stilts. Because I also thought about it right now while you were explaining some parts, some characteristics there of the geography.
Yeah.
Not building on stilts, because we're not in Southeast Asia, where actually the communities for hundreds of years know how to build on stilts, how to live on water.
Yeah.
Namibians don't know how to live on water.
Even
if you ask Franz today, even if I ask you, Hamoud,
you... The reason why I learned how to swim is so I can get out of the water.
Exactly. No. This is not about, you know, sleeping in a house that's built on the water situations. No.
It's all fun and games until you have a nightmare that something is chasing you, and then you wake up and run.
Yeah. So that's the concern. So the concern is, how does Namibia embrace, or the regional council of Zambezi, how do they embrace Mother Nature specifically in regional development?
Actually, you may have a point on the stilts example.
It'll be difficult. Do you know why?
Why?
If you're living on the river, you understand the longer the stilt.
Yeah.
But let's say you are living in a piece of dry land that is in a floodplain.
Yeah.
How high do you build? Because the last floods, this one of sort of the year,
yeah,
I think this was like waist high, the water?
Depends on which part you are.
Or was it like chest height in some cases?
Depends on which part you are, because some parts are going to be pretty deep, but some of the crossing points are going to be somewhere around your knees, and some parts basically becomes very dangerous because of also the current.
Yeah, so if the... And we're now obviously just spitballing some suggestions. If the construction methods in Zambezi are tailored to Zambezi's needs, for example, rural communities...
Tailored to the terrain.
Yeah, meaning you artificially, where a community is living, rural community, you artificially build a slightly higher mound of living space.
Yeah.
You know, so let's say your road is like yay low, and where you want the village to stand is like, let's say, not 2 meters, because 2 meters is this wall. But let's say it's like half a meter higher.
Yeah.
You know, or not half a meter, let's make it a meter higher, you know. But then you obviously put things in place to say, listen, in the event of said more flood waters coming through, this is how high we are building rural communities outside in the bush. Another scenario is potentially also... since I saw Spain, early warning systems are not convincing enough for me.
So you need multiple Majors, not just one.
Yeah.
So early warning alone is not going to cut it.
The best early warning potentially that can be invested in is if the Zambezi Regional Council invests literally in emergency response services, meaning having a fire brigade in Katima, yeah. Having trained emergency medical
medical teams,
technicians.
Yeah.
You have those people with, they must have their own dedicated ambulance, and the fire brigade has their own particular infrastructure. So we're talking about these guys are just prepping in the event of a flood, because a flood is a natural disaster.
Yeah.
Another scenario is potentially if we've got, for example, an NDF base there. They can also be converted into like what you see, for example, like in Indonesia and other Asian countries, where the army steps in as a disaster risk intervention entity.
Yeah.
Because you can mobilize resources through them. But do we have such a particular installation in the Zambezi region?
I think that's why, you know, okay, we have the like a short-term response mechanism, though, even though they have been pointed out several times, including in this report, that they are inadequate.
Mm.
But if we are talking about a long-term solution,
mm.
I think long-term solution to, you know, to a flooding problem or for a place that is just that's laying so low of a plane, it's, you know, will it require some will require us to, you know, to move from a reactive type of approach, as in, you know, just simple logistics of delivering tents and you know, just temporarily relocating people until the water levels go down,
mm-hmm.
to one that will require very expensive solutions like engineering, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There are solutions to this. The Japanese, for example, know that the island nation is very earthquake prone.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up with a solution of building literal skyscrapers on shock absorbers.
Mm-hmm.
That's their own solution to the specific problem they have.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, they have the engineering and the money. Now,
plus, their laws allow their disaster risk to react very quickly. Do you know what's one of the best memes that exist on the internet, which is actually factual about the Japanese? If that earthquake, Hamud, today breaks a road, splits a road in two, by the end of the week, that road is fixed.
But by the end of the week, there will still be, actually, a tender will have to be put up, and people, you know, two tender preneurs will, one of them will be granted the tender in like 5 months.
And then there's a dispute about
Who should have won.
And in between, Namibians have been falling into that hole the whole time.
And then our procurement act is a comedy show.
But in an Asian context, and that's why I respect the whole continent of Asia's disaster risk, disaster response.
You know what?
It's streamlined. You can see it's in the event of from monitoring.
Yeah.
Now here's the funny thing. Let's start from monitoring.
Yeah.
Remember yesterday I told you that the Namibia Meteorological Services are under the Ministry of Works and Transport.
Yeah.
And I explained the reason for that, because you can immediately understand why. Because under Works and Transport, you've got the Civil Aviation Services.
Yeah.
But also under them, they have to speak to the security cluster as well. For example, the NDF and the Air Force. Because the Air Force, they've got radar technicians as well that have to monitor Namibia's airspaces.
Yeah.
But here's the concern, Helmut. In other countries, it's basically okay. I suspect also in Namibia's context, it's like a multi-stakeholder disaster risk response, because it would include, you know, other stakeholders. But they literally streamline everything to say, listen, in the event if something happens, we can send out response teams even while the storm is happening. Or even while the flood is still persisting, or even while new rainfall is happening, they will send out people.
You know,
it's just in our context, we will ask the question, why must we first send out the person? Let's wait for the thing to stop.
Our problem is focused not on who should solve the problem, or not how we should solve the solve the problem.
But who?
Who must get a tender to go and solve the problem? Like, when, our tender is the priority. The problem is secondary.
In disaster risk, I mean, you can't have a tender.
Here's the thing.
You can't have a tender.
Welcome to the land of the brave. Look, the thing is, look, the thing is, this what you're looking at here is what China is doing in Nepal.
Now, and they already responded now.
Yeah. I mean, at night falls, rescue workers continue their efforts in the site after a deadly mudslide hit along the China-Nepal border. The thing is, the rescue workers, you know, when you're looking at a disaster like the one that took place in Nepal, time is of the essence. So you can't go to bed and say, you know what, we'll start the rescue mission the next day. Yeah. Because people there are people that you could save that are still under the rubble, that, you know, still stand a chance of survival.
Yeah.
So you have to work around the clock. When the sun went down and the rescue team were like, oh, where should we get the, they're like, China was like, don't worry, we got this.
Mm.
They deployed drones with street light type of luminate lights, providing all the lights. You know what? Don't worry. We'll take care of that. You just keep working.
Mm.
Now, I know a place where that would have required a tender.
Mm.
Where you could have been told, switch off those lights because, well, we first have to do the paperwork to make sure that everything is going according to protocol observed, so that we don't get into trouble.
Mm.
But the thing is, you have an issue here, and I have a solution. Just give me the solution.
Mm.
Now, you see, I think the long-term solution to the flooding issue, especially on a flooding on a large scale because of how low the plain is.
Stop making me famous, Hamoud.
Now it's my turn.
Yeah.
Now, you see, the thing is for a plane that is very, I think a flood prone is an understatement, because that's a very large plane.
That is a large surface area.
Yeah. And look, you either have a reactive response like the one we have right now, which is, in some years when the flood is not high enough, well, that's okay. But when the water levels rises above, above average, that's when you have to now kick in and look at, the affected and provide all the medical supplies and the food and accommodation, shelter type of solutions, like your tents, for example.
That's an excellent
solution. We have that. That's the first one. The second one would require some engineering feat. Now, the one thing I like about the engineering solution is that it provides you with a very with a permanent solution if you think of it in a very in a long term way. If you look at the Burj Khalifa hotel, for example.
Mm.
That thing was built in a desert.
Mm.
And if you watch a documentary, I watched a documentary of the nightmare that the engineers had to go through to make sure that once a multi-ton, tallest structure on the planet is set up on a literal lucent, it doesn't tip over and fall. So they had to, navigate all the challenges, to navigate around all the challenges that comes with building a structure of that size on lucent.
Yeah.
So that means if there is an engineering solution to building the tallest building on lucent, and there is an engineering solution to building literal skyscrapers on shock absorbers in an earthquake-prone environment like Japan, then there is an engineering solution to building structures in a flat plain that is flood-prone, like most parts of the Zambezi region. The thing is, that will require exactly that, some serious engineering knowledge, which doesn't come cheap on its own. And you factor in the infrastructure and the technology, and then you are going there like, you know what? For now, let's just stick to 50 kg and canned fish. We'll get... Because look, look, there is an engineering solution, but it's not going to be cheap. But the thing is, in a long run, you will realize that our reactive response, our reactive solution, is not cheap either, because the expenses is just going to pile up.
Mm. The accounting will just become more difficult. Yeah. Unless, for example, like I said, the Zambezi Regional Council comes up with like a development plan that is tailored around how to live within a flood-prone area.
Yeah.
Because, yes, even though Katima is the administrative capital, Katima would also need reinforcement, because these things are just going to become more and more obvious. They're going to become more and more often. These particular floods are going to happen more often as we get in, you know, as we advance, obviously, with time going ahead from 2026. And it will later on become a question where the lawmakers plus government, which are the executive, they will ask a straightforward question. Okay. Or two questions. Do we really forcibly relocate Namibians out of their rural communities, which they call home, and put them all in Katima, but then create a potential slum situation in Katima? And we fast track the urbanization and mass growth of Katima's town limits? Or do we actually play clever with the engineering in the bush and technically apply bush engineering to try and alleviate people's lives? Because one of the things I explained, for example, like investing in the response services, Nehamud.
Yeah.
Those people would be based in Katima. They would have to respond from Katima. If you position also, let's say, a localized response or a monitoring office, for example, like from the Meteorological Services, for example.
Yeah.
You position an office there, let's say, in Katima as well. Those guys will be all concentrated in Katima. Now, when the flooding obviously happens, you don't hear of Katima flooding. You hear of the rural areas flooding. It's where the people are living in the bush that are flooding. And how you get to them and respond to them. And remember, it's that sometimes it's that that weird sand. You can't just approach with any bucky. It's a specific bucky that you have to buy.
Yeah, loose end is gonna require. You just don't show up with your fancy.
Exactly.
You need one that's trusted by the Talibans.
You had to go Taliban. I was at least gonna say the Houthis from Yemen. Well, the Houthis from Yemen obviously provided the best advertising for that car, but it's how you respond with that particular budget that you would put forward. Because I mean, that bucket alone is $1 million, the cheapest.
Exactly. Now,
and that's just the single cab. That's not even the double cab. Because a double cab version of that same car is literally $1 million. The single cab is just been between the 900 and the million.
You see, here's the thing. This is why much of this, both solutions, if you are looking at them, both of them are expensive. Yeah. One is expensive short term. The other is expensive long term.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reactive one is going to be expensive.
But now imagine the short-term one.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine it happening within a span of 5 years.
Yeah.
3 times. 3 years out of that 5 years,
yeah,
you've had 3 floods. So now you're multiplying short-term shocks, which look bad in the big picture.
Yeah, long-term.
Whereas if you say, okay, let's plan properly and then invest in infrastructure that helps alleviate pressures from communities in Zambezi, then you go like, okay, this is a continuous project we are investing in.
Now, look, the thing is, even how we are building, you take for example a public sector.
Yeah.
There's a place called Shadithiki.
Mm.
When parts of the Kavango River, when parts of the Kavango region, especially Kavango East, where I'm from, are floods, you'll find, some places, you'll find schools are flooded. You have the water going up to the level of windows. Mm. That's how you see that, even where the public infrastructure is being set up on the low plains.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you just say, and I mean, you could set up at the high plains, but then you will have to explain why the, you know, the kids of the residents will have to, you know, get a Land Cruiser to get to school.
Yep. But we really have to take a short break, guys, and we come back right after this.
And actually sign out. It's China Corner time.
Yeah.